Hey friends, it's Coach Andrea. Welcome to another episode of Blow the Whistle. I hope that your 2024 is off to a good start. If you're here in Texas with me, you're preparing for freezing cold weather, which if you know me and you've listened to this podcast for any amount of time, you know I am absolutely not excited about at all. For those who have a short memory, in 2021, we had the freeze that shut down the city for like 2 weeks. People had busted pipes. We didn't have power. Couldn't get to the grocery store. It was really some apocalyptic type experience that I never want to experience again. But nevertheless, I'm not in charge of nature, which this is a perfect segue for what we're going to be talking about today. Now, I am going to give a trigger warning here in the intro that this podcast today may be triggering for partners. It may be triggering for people who are the betrayers. But I'm going to be having a tough conversation about choices and the importance of focusing on your choices, which can be very, very difficult when you are the victim of betrayal. Now, I am coming to you as a person who has had to make tough choices myself, who has to help other people make tough choices, and as someone who gets to observe what happens when people try to avoid making hard choices. So it's gonna be a wild ride. Buckle up, get warm, get cozy. Without further ado, it's time for another episode of Blow the Whistle. As I mentioned in my last two podcasts, the end of the year brings a lot of reflection for me. But it's also true that I'm reflecting a lot because I'm coming up on 10 years post-discovery and just how much the discovery of betrayal has changed and impacted my life in a lot of good ways, but also in a lot of ways that I still have not recovered from. And one of the things that has been resonating with me so deeply was this idea that I couldn't see my choices. And when I say I couldn't see them, I couldn't see them because I had not been informed of them, or I had been misinformed. And so a lot of my recovery, even now, in these later stages, is unlearning things that I learned. And as I'm working with partners, and it's always true when I decide like what I'm going to talk about for a podcast, it's usually based on conversations that I'm having multiple times in a session or during the week that highlight to me, this is something that a lot of people need discussed. So I bring it here to a larger audience. And that's how I came to want to talk about choices today, because it's been a lot of my conversation in helping partners to feel empowered. Now, we know the multidimensional partner trauma model that Barbara Steffens developed was based a lot on Judith Herman's work from her book, Trauma and Recovery. And so I'm going to be reading some Judith Herman quotes and trying to piece them together to really help partners. This podcast is really dedicated to partners who maybe feel stuck or feel like they don't have a choice, or are struggling to make a choice from the choices that they see presented to them. And sometimes a simple shift in thinking or expansion of knowledge can change the way we view our choices. Doesn't mean that the choices get easier, but we start to view them from a different perspective. So one of the things that Judith Herman says in the book, Trauma and Recovery, is that the core experiences of psychological trauma are disempowerment and disconnection from others. We know this is true with betrayal trauma. No partner makes a choice to be betrayed. She doesn't say, okay, yeah, go Watch all the porn you want, go sleep with all the women, men, prostitutes, escorts you want. Yeah, hide money, deceive me about your time. Yeah, go ahead and do that. No partner agrees to that. And so you are disempowered when someone withholds information from you that is critical to your making a choice. This is why when we go to the doctor in the hospital now, we have to sign all these forms that we've been told about privacy and HIPAA compliance, and we understand what we're consenting to for treatment and all the dangers and the risks, because we're entering into something that could be life-changing. And the hospitals know that they have to inform us upfront so that we can give fully informed consent. Well, if you take this in the context of a marriage is believed to be agreeing to monogamy, agreeing to a one-person system for the most part. You know, there are people who are polyamorous, but that's generally not our population. So you're agreeing, it's me and you say vows of what you promise to do and how you promise to be. And within the context of saying, I'm marrying you, it says that we're in a partnership where we no longer seek our own interests above the other, but we work together for what's best for us as a couple. Like I said, when you go to the hospital, they say you're agreeing to this, here the risks, dangers, benefits, blah, 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 and you have to sign that form. Well, a partner who is standing in front of you committing to be faithful to you and to you only, that's how you enter into the agreement of marriage. And so, excuse me, the disempowerment comes because you don't have the information that you need to consent to what's happening in the relationship. You're not being given full choice to understand the dangers of choices that someone else is making that could impact your life. So there is a sense of disempowerment and a disconnection from the person you're married to, but also at the discovery of betrayal, there's a lot of disconnection from your community. So the person we would normally go to for safety and security or to process something traumatic or awful that happened to us is no longer safe because that person is the perpetrator. They're the one who's caused the harm. And so you have a disconnection from them. Most partners feel very disconnected from themselves. They feel crazy. And then there's this disconnection from people around you because you can't just go tell any and everyone, hey, here's what happened to me. And if you've ever done that, you know how re-traumatizing and unsafe that can be. So she says, recovery, therefore, is based upon the empowerment of the survivor and the creation of new connections. Recovery can only take place within the context of relationships. Recovery can only take place within the context of relationships. This is why we encourage partners, get in a group, get with a good APSATS trained coach or therapist. Find safe people around you. If you don't know any, this is where the group comes in, that you meet new people. It cannot occur in isolation. In her renewed connection with other people, the survivor recreates the psychological facilities that were damaged or deformed by the traumatic experience. These faculties include the basic operations of trust, autonomy, initiative, competence, identity, and intimacy. Just as these capabilities are formed in relationships with other people, they must be reformed in such relationships. The first principle of recovery is empowerment of the survivor. She must be the author and arbiter of her own recovery. Others may offer advice, support, assistance, affection, and care, but not cure. Most benevolent and well-intentioned attempts to assist the survivor flounder because this basic principle of empowerment is not observed. No intervention that takes power away from the survivor can possibly foster her recovery, no matter how much it appears to be in her immediate best interest. Again, what I want you to take away from that part of what I just read is that being empowered is critical to recovery, and being empowered is being able to choose, not being forced into a situation which puts you in a victim place of being powerless and helpless. Empowerment is about having the ability to choose, which is why we don't tell partners what to do. We don't tell people, hey, you need to do this or do that. We're encouraging partners to seek and find safety and understand what that means for them. But the minute you tell a partner what to do, you take away her power. So the literal definition of empowerment is the authority or power given to someone to do something. And what we empower partners to do is to make choices for themselves. Now, like I said, this podcast is about choices and the power to make a choice. And when we don't feel empowered to make a choice, so I hear a lot of partners say, I don't feel like I have a choice. What's really being said underneath that is there's not a choice here that I like. I have to choose between what seems like two bad choices, and I don't want to do that. So it feels like it's not my choice because I don't want either one of these things. I don't want to stay in a relationship with someone that is mistreating me, but I also don't want to be divorced. I don't want to be single. So I don't have a choice. And actually, both of those are choices. They're decisions that we each have to make. So, you know, I love what Dr. Jake Porter always says. He says, we always have choices. We may not like our choices, but we have them. And sometimes we have to make a choice we don't like to get to a choice that we do like. And that's a tough pill to swallow, because the whole idea is that I didn't choose to be betrayed. I didn't ask to be here. And if my partner hadn't betrayed me, if this hadn't been brought into my life, if I hadn't been traumatized, then I wouldn't have to make this choice. So now it feels like it's not my choice. And what I really want to do, and what I try to do, is help partners to realize that you didn't choose what happened to you. You can't go back and change that. There's nothing we can do to take away the trauma and pain of betrayal. So that's 50,000 steps that led you to this place that you are now. But do you want to move forward? Do you want to step into a new space? And in order to step into that new space, you have to be willing to make choices. I often use the analogy of being in a car with a drunk driver. Your partner's been drinking too much. You know that. You try to say, hey, I don't feel like you should be driving. They don't listen. They get behind the wheel, or maybe they've had too much to drink and they hid it from you, which is usually true with partners, right? We don't know what's going on. So your partner's been drinking, they hid it from you. And then you find out, but it's too late. You're already in the car. And you have an accident. You get thrown from the car. Wasn't your fault. You didn't know when you got in the car that this person was drinking. But you have to heal. And in order to heal, one, you have to decide that you want to heal. That's a choice. Also, you have to decide to do the work of healing. So if that means surgery, if that means physical therapy, if that means being in a cast, if that means amputating a limb, none of those feel like good choices in the moment. But If the goal is to be restored to health, if the goal is to heal, it means you're going to have to make hard choices. And I want to take a pause and just kind of let that sit in. Check in with yourself. How does it feel to hear me say that? That you didn't choose what happened to you. But if you want to heal, you will have to make some hard choices. So partners will say, I don't want to be in a group. I remember saying this. Why do I now have to alter my whole schedule? The group that I went to was on Monday nights. So I had to rearrange my Mondays to make sure that I was ready to go in time to get to my group. I spent that time away from my kids, which I didn't want to. I was tired. Monday was the start of the week, school, all the things that we were doing. And it's like now I, at the end of the day, rather than being able to relax, I got to go sit in a group with strangers, talk about my most intimate details, hear their most intimate details. I am in other recovery meetings. I'm reading recovery books. My whole life is changed because of this thing, this choice that you made. And suddenly it's like, it's my problem. But what I realized, I mean, I still went to the group, okay? Screaming and kicking the whole time. But what I realized the more that I went to the group, which is where this community comes in that Judith Herman is talking about, the more that I went to the group, the more I learned things that I needed to know in order to heal. No one was talking to me about disclosure, polygraphs, intensives, boundaries, all of these things that I needed to know in order to establish some safety for myself, for my children, and to be able to heal in or out of the relationship. And so I made myself go. I reminded myself that this wasn't for the marriage. This was for me. And I think a critical choice that partners have to make is their why. Why am I doing this? You've heard me say this before, but I will ask a partner two questions. One, why are you still there? Like, what's keeping you in the relationship? Because I want them to have time to think through their own why so that they know that they're making a choice. It's not being forced upon you. You don't have to stay. So, do you know why you're staying? Sometimes partners don't even know why they're staying, you know? And then once you know why you're staying, if you're going to stay, why are you making the choice to heal? Why are you here? Like all of the things that could happen to us in life, we could get hit by a car, we could get a disease, we could experience homelessness. I mean, there's lots of things that could happen to us, but yet here we are experiencing betrayal. So then it becomes a very personal question of why am I here? Yeah, I'm here because my partner betrayed me. And they betrayed me, so there's now something that I need to get from this process. There's some healing that happens, needs to happen for me. And so my why was, I want to be better. I don't want to be in a place where I am so naive or so trusting that I am blind to betrayal. Now, that's not me taking fault for what happened, but recognizing that there had been some patterns in my life where people had betrayed me and I hadn't seen the signs. So it says something to me about how I was trusting people, who I was trusting, how I was giving trust. And actually, I was just giving it. I didn't wait for people to earn it. Everybody got the same level of trust. And so that was something that I had to learn. And I think for a partner who is wanting to enter into good recovery, you have to know your why. Why am I here in this place learning these things? What here is valuable for me in my life? No, I didn't want to be betrayed. No, I don't want to be here. But if I'm in a hospital and I'm in traction and my legs are put up and my arms are put up, why am I here? What can I take away from this? And don't confuse this with trying to find the lesson. I'm not saying find the lesson. I'm saying find a reason, make a choice as to what you're going to do for your own healing and why you're choosing this. Do you want to heal? Do you see ways that you could change or learn or know something? It's not putting a lesson on, oh, this happened to me so that this, and this could happen. It's like, no, I didn't ask to be here. I don't want to be here. But now that I'm here, and this takes a while because it's a place of radical acceptance. I have to go through my grief journey. This isn't what I wanted. This is not how I saw my life going. I can't believe this is my reality. And then when I come to that place where I can say, okay, now that this is my reality, what choices are available to me? I don't have to stay here forever. What do I want to change or be different so that I can move forward and heal? Okay, so if you listen to the last two podcasts where I was talking about growing up and really understanding that suffering is a part of life, that we're all going to go through something. We don't get to choose always what that something is. A lot of times we find ourselves victim to circumstances. No one chooses cancer. No one chooses to be in a hurricane or a tornado. No one chooses to be a victim of an accident, a car accident. It's a risk that we take being in this world. And so being alive in a world that is broken and chaotic means that we are exposed to suffering. How do we approach that suffering? Going back to empowering a partner to recognize her choices. This is a quote from Edith Edgar. She has a book called The Choice. She's a Holocaust survivor. And this is what she says: suffering is universal, but victimhood is optional. There is a difference between victimization and victimhood. We are likely to be victimized in some way in the course of our lives. At some point, we will suffer some kind of affliction or calamity or abuse caused by circumstances or people or institutions over which we have little or no control. This is life. And this is victimization. It comes from outside. It's the neighborhood bully, the boy who rages, the spouse who hits, the lover who cheats, the discriminatory law, the accident that lands you in the hospital. In contrast, victimhood comes from inside. No one can make you a victim but you. We become victims not because of what happens to us, but when we choose to hold on to our victimization. We develop a victim's mind, a way of thinking and being that is rigid, blaming, pessimistic, stuck in the past, unforgiving, punitive, and without healthy limits or boundaries. We become our own jailers when we choose the confines of the victim's mind. Now, although I said this podcast was dedicated to partners, that last part about victimhood, if you are the betrayer listening to this, I find that this is where most of the betrayers get stuck. They're stuck in a victimhood. It's not my fault. I didn't want to do this. I didn't choose this. If you ask why the infidelity, why the addiction, oh, because my mom, because my dad, because my, and again, what she's saying is this isn't that we name things that happened to us and understand how we got to the place where we became a victim. Victimhood is when we make a home there, when it becomes the launching pad for everything that we do and that, or that we don't do. I can't do this because this happened to me. I can't do this, or I did this because of my hurt, my pain. And so we stay in a place of powerlessness and helplessness. And that is where I see a lot of the betrayers falling prior to good recovery. We develop a victim's mind, a way of thinking and being that is rigid, blaming, pessimistic, stuck in the past, unforgiving, punitive, and without healthy limits or boundaries. So if we're thinking about what does it mean for us to move into a place of empowerment, to be assertive, to make choices for ourselves, it is the opposite of this, right? That I am not rigid. And again, this all ties into the last two podcasts I did. So if you want a fuller context, go and listen to that. But I'm not rigid, right? That I can be flexible. So me saying, nope, I'm not going to a group is me being very rigid, that I didn't do this. This isn't my problem. It leaves me in a sense of denial of the wound or the injury that's happened to me. And I'm making a choice that keeps me in a place of isolation, that keeps me in a place of harm, which then keeps me in a place of unhealth, dishealth, whatever the right word is, I never know. But I'm not healthy. I can't be healthy when I'm in denial, blaming. Stuck in the past, unforgiving, punitive, and without healthy limits or boundaries. So one of the first things that we do in that first stage of recovery is helping a partner find safety. And a lot of that safety comes from setting healthy limits and boundaries. There are some bottom line behaviors that are non-negotiables that, no, I won't accept this and I won't accept that. But then comes the boundaries, and the boundaries become hard because when I set these limits, now I get to see what my partner is or isn't going to step into, which then may force me to make some harder choices. If you want to hear my podcast on boundaries, I did that one just a couple of weeks ago. You can go back and listen to that. A lot of partners resist the setting the boundaries. It's terrifying that what if I set this boundary and he or she doesn't live up to it? What if I set this boundary and they leave? And so we have to deal with the underlying fear and the thing, the block that keeps you from setting boundaries. I often tell my clients, we're making decisions from two places, either our fear or our values. And fear-based decisions don't put us in the place we want to go. They keep us. It's the difference between playing to win and playing not to lose. So if I am playing a game, rather than being strategic and thoughtful and intentional, all I'm trying to do is guard what I have, which keeps me stuck in a place of not moving forward. And so when you start making decisions that are all rooted in fear, all rooted in a lot of old behaviors, learned behaviors, some unhealthy behaviors, we're going to get what we've always gotten. So you know the famous saying, if I want to get something different, I have to be willing to do something I haven't done. And for a lot of partners, this is where the boundaries come in. This is where you have to say, I will no longer be in a conversation where you use foul language. I need to be in a relationship that is respectful and kind. And if you choose to use foul language, I'm going to remove myself from the conversation because the risk in that is that they may stop talking. They may stonewall you. They may pull away, and that sense of abandonment starts to rise up. And now, what do I do with that? That I'm left with this hard feeling. But this is where recognizing your choices and your why. So, why did I set this boundary? I set this boundary because It was healthy for me to do that. It created a safe space in order for me to heal. Reminding yourself of that when your partner is pulling away from you, that I can make safe connections with other people. And this is where the affirmations come in. I have to affirm myself. I have to have other people around me to affirm me so that I don't stay in a place that keeps me feeling stuck. So that's the first thing, is recognizing that in order to heal, I can acknowledge that I am a victim. And I know I read this quote before, I think, when I did the Victim Survivor Thriver podcast. But it so resonates with me, because in order to not build my home in victimhood, I have to recognize that I'm going to have to make some hard choices. And a lot of those hard choices come in the form of consequences for boundaries. But then sometimes we set the boundary and then we have to make choices from that. And it becomes a spiral of one choice leads to another choice, leads to another choice. And what do I do when none of those choices seem like choices that I want to make? None of those choices feel like places that I want to step into. When we stay in a place of indecision, that is also making a choice. And again, I don't want you to hear me say, you got to rush through this. You know, you're betrayed, and a lot of partners start out, I don't want to be a victim, but you are. You are. You can't heal until you acknowledge that you are a victim of something awful that happened to you. You have to be able to talk about that and name that and work through that and process that. And even in that, you're making choices. Do I want to stay in the house or out of the house? Do I want to sleep in the same bedroom with this person? Who do I want to tell? Do I want to seek out a counselor? What's the next step? You're trying to make a lot of choices. So this is why we start with boundaries, but we also start with some values work. So that when you're making those choices, if you tell me that your values are honesty, health and well-being, family and spirituality, if those are your values, then I'm going to ask you, when you're making a decision, how does this align with your values? When you have a partner that is still lying to you and you're saying, you know, there's nothing I can do about that, how does that align with your value of honesty? How are you living out of that value? If you were living out of that value, if you were literally operating from a place of what it means to value honesty, what other choice would you be making? And when we can get to the place where we can have those kinds of conversations, it really helps partners to see, no, I do have choices. I have a lot of choices. I'm just terrified to make them. And then we can work through the fear. Before we talk about how to make a choice and how to look at your choices, I want to acknowledge the pain that comes with betrayal. And like I said before, the choices that we have a lot of times are choices that we don't like. The reason I'm sharing this today is because our language matters. So if I say to myself, I don't have a choice, I am speaking from a disempowered position. I'm saying I don't have any power. I'm powerless and helpless over my life. And you heard the quote from Judith Herman that in order for a person to recover, they have to have that sense of empowerment. And this is true for so many partners, because to survive a marriage where betrayal is happening, and I've said this before, you have to do a lot of what I call shape shifting. You have to adapt. You don't get to live as your authentic self, because otherwise the relationship wouldn't survive. When a person is deceiving, manipulating, Avoiding responsibility, denying. Usually the partner is like bearing the weight of that responsibility and over functioning while this other person is under functioning. And so you kind of have to learn to be quiet, or you stop asking questions, or you make it that it's about you and not about them. That, you know, you start to believe some of the mental abuse and the gymnastics. And so to heal, you have to be in a place where you recognize that there was a lot of dysfunction in the relationship. And in order to move forward, you have to learn how to function in a different manner. So that's why learning to make these choices is critical, because if you keep yourself in a place of, I don't have a choice, then you stay disempowered. And if you stay disempowered, it's very difficult to heal. So let's talk about some of the choices that are the hard ones to make, and then how you can get in a place where the first step is recognizing that you do have a choice and saying that to yourself, I have a choice. And then being able to talk through the choices that are available for you, which one would be most in alignment with your value, so forth and so on. So, some of the biggest choices that I see partners struggling with, I already said one is setting boundaries. Okay, you told me I need to set boundaries. I set a boundary. I don't know how to come up with the consequence, right? If he doesn't do this or he doesn't do that, then what do I do? And it's usually the struggle with the consequence is because it's going to cause some upset in the relationship. And so it becomes like an avoidance. I want to avoid him leaving. I want to avoid him getting angry. I want to avoid. So I'm trying to control an outcome versus focusing on what do I need to do in order to feel safe. And so sometimes you have to work through that. The other big struggle, of course, is to stay or to go. And honestly, I was thinking about this when I was recording this. I'm like, have I ever seen a partner really struggle to stay? Like, they want to stay, but it's hard. And staying is hard. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying usually if there's a struggle about staying or going, it's because I want to stay, but what if I need to go? That's usually where the struggle is, more than the opposite of, I want to go, but what if I should stay? Not saying that doesn't happen. I'm saying more than likely it is the I want to stay, but what if I need to go? And so making that choice is not one choice. It's a lot of choices in that. And so that's where we bring up the diagram of the elephant and point to eating one bite at a time. Okay, what do I need to make in the immediate situation if there's not immediate danger? My children aren't in danger. I'm not in danger. How do I know whether to stay or go? And a lot of times that takes time. Again, thinking over the 10 years, I'm trying to think of the number of partners who have just left right away. Like they found out something and they were done. I've seen them. I've worked with some, but more than likely, I forget the percentages, but it's like 80 or 90% of partners stay and try to work it out. And so, should I stay or should I go? What about the kids? You know, what do I tell the kids? What about my church? And when we bring God into it, you know, people have misguided teachings about the Bible, or scripture has been twisted, or maybe there's a cultural thing. You know, there's so many reasons that people struggle with their choices, but these are some of the biggest ones that I see people struggle with. How do I make a choice when I don't like any of the choices in front of me? The first thing that I encourage a partner to do, I ask this question: if fear was not present and failure was not an option, what would your choice be? Or I'll say something like, if you had a magic wand and you could wave it to make it look how you want, what would your choice be? And we start there. The reason I ask those kinds of questions is not because we have any magic or we can control the future, but a lot of times when you take fear and failure out of the equation, people can tell you like what their dream is, what they wish for. Notice I didn't say hope for, I said wish for, what they wish for. Oh, I wish, we could heal and we could be together. I want to stay. Or I wish that I had the money. I would just leave. And so those kinds of thoughts are telling you something about your desires and what might be getting in the way of you making a choice that's in alignment, not just with your desires, but with your values. And I'll use myself as an example because I like to be vulnerable about my story. And I've shared this before. I wanted to leave right away. I was done, 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 doner than done. But I really felt this call to wait. And I wrestled with God for a long time. I said, I don't want to do this. I can't. If you heard my podcast, The Fight for My Life, I read from my journal entry where I told God I felt like he was asking me for too much. But the wisdom in making the choice to wait for me, and this is not true for everyone, so please don't try to take my story and apply it to your life. But the wisdom in waiting for me was God was aligning me with certain people, with resources, with the ability to provide financially. My kids were getting older. All of these things had to fall into place in order for me to be able to do what I needed to do to take care of myself and my children. And so the choice to stay, even though I felt like God was saying that to me, I had to make it my choice. So in my choice to stay, again, it was like, why am I staying? One, because I trust God. This is my choice. God's not forcing this on me. I'm staying because I trust God, because I believe that he has a good plan for me. I'm staying because I'm committed to myself to be better. And what happens in the relationship is not, I don't control that outcome. I'm going to do all the work that I can to try to save the marriage. But in the end, if that doesn't work, I already know what my next choice is. My next choice is going to be to leave. And especially when I feel like God's giving me a green light to go. I was like Moses, like, I just need to know you're going with me. I don't care where you're sending me, but I really need to know that you're going with me. So sometimes our choice has to be if we do need that assurance from God. We have to be like Gideon and put that fleece out there. Sometimes we need to talk it through with other people. When I chose to stay, that wasn't what some people thought I should do, but they didn't pressure me either way, but they shared their opinions. And finally, it got to a place where people were saying to me, hey, I'm concerned about this. Hey, I'm worried about you. And so having good counsel around you is helpful. So that's the first thing, is looking at what would I choose if fear and failure weren't in front of me? Like, I have the freedom to do what I want. What do I want to do? And that'll give you a clue. Doesn't mean that it's exactly right, but it'll give you some clues into really the desires of your heart. The second thing you need to do is ask some questions. Like Dr. Henry Cloud has some great questions in his book, Necessary Endings, where it's like 6 months from now, do I want to be experiencing the same thing that I'm experiencing now? And if not, what do I want to be different? And then what steps do I need to make to create that difference? So that's a really powerful question to ask yourself. 6 months from now, what do I need to be different? And what is within my control and what is not? Sometimes partners want to leave and they don't feel like they have a choice because they're in situations like mine where they homeschool, they have no job, they have no money, they don't have family to go stay with, or maybe there's a medical illness or disability or something that makes it very, very difficult to leave. And if that's the case, again, it's looking at, okay, is this, does this choice seem viable if you made some changes? You can't change being sick, so sometimes leaving may not be a choice. But how do I make sure that staying doesn't kill me either? And if I'm going to stay, then still, how do I stay safe? But if I want to leave and it's just the fear and the finances that are getting in the way of me leaving, how do I recognize that that's my choice and start to make other choices that help me to move in that direction, even if they're choices I don't like? I didn't want to give up homeschooling. I didn't want to go back to work and leave my kids. I also didn't want to die in a marriage that was destructive. So none of those choices felt good to me, but it was still a choice that I had to make. And the biggest choice I think that partners really struggle with is to put themselves first, to decide that you are worth fighting for, and that the fight is not about your husband. The fight is not about your partner. The fight is not about the betrayer. The fight is the fight that you're going to fight for yourself, to have a voice, to ask for what you need, to speak up when things are not right, to set boundaries, to create distance if you need to for safety, to go to counseling for yourself. I was putting myself last in the beginning. Oh, he needs the counseling. It's his problem. He needs to do this. No, I needed it just as much as him. So how do I choose when financially both of us can't do it? Well, we got to figure it out. We have to figure it out because I'm making the choice to make myself a priority. And I want to take a pause here and just say to every partner, if nobody else acknowledges that you are worth the fight, I want you to hear it coming from my mouth that you are worth the fight. And it's going to be hard because you're so used to putting everyone before you. It's going to challenge what you think it means to be a woman or a godly woman or a Christian woman or whatever the constructs that have been formed in your mind, the way you've been programmed to think you're quote unquote supposed to believe. It's going to require you forming new thoughts and ideas, but you are worth it. You are 110% worth it. So going back to how do I make the choice when the choices are hard? Surround yourself with people who will speak truth to you. After going to group a couple of months, ladies tend to form relationships. Form relationships with ladies who seem to be going in a direction you want to go. And I mean that in terms of their healing, not necessarily in terms of their marriage. Find ladies who are going in the direction you want to go in terms of their healing. And make them a part of your circle. Ask them if they can be part of your council, to ask questions, to challenge you on your thoughts, to help you see where your choices are. And surround yourself with those people. And part of learning to trust yourself is that you are thoughtful about your own choices. So, my kids and I love to play Clue. And part of playing Clue is that you have to figure out who committed the murder and with what weapon. And when we first started playing, we were just trying to like keep track of, okay, what's been revealed? What do we see? And then we realized, like, hey, we got to be more strategic with this. So we started, this might be cheating. I don't know according to the rules, but we decided to do what worked for us. And we all came up with our own tracking system of how do I know that it's not this person or this weapon, or where is there a question about a certain person or a certain weapon? And then the better we got at it, then the easier it was to know who did it, where, and what with what weapon. Now, what does that have to do with making choices after betrayal? Because you have to come up with a system. Again, you heard me say we might be breaking all the rules. You have to come up with a system that allows you to keep track of what you need to keep track of in order to make decisions. When you're in the midst of betrayal, you have brain fog, you forget, things get distorted. Sometimes you think, oh, we're doing better. But if you go back and you look at your tracking system, you're like, no, for 6 months, we've been having the same argument. So come up with your own system that helps you keep track of the data that you need in order to make a choice. And that helps you to feel empowered over your own choices. You don't feel scared, like, oh, I always have to have somebody around me because I don't see accurately or I don't notice these things. You are training yourself to be in charge and empowered over your own decisions. And the more that you do that, the more that you learn, okay, I have a system. I know what I'm looking for, what I'm looking at, and I know how to trust myself in that. Then again, you feel more empowered. Now, I don't want to negate, and I already said it, the importance of having other people, because sometimes we can be looking at the data, we can see the trend, we can know exactly what we need to do. And this is where it gets scary on the other end. Sometimes partners know, okay, he's done the work, he's been consistent, he's showing up, and now he's asking me out on a date, or he's asking me for a hug, or he's asking me to move back in the bedroom, and I'm terrified of making that choice. So this is where other people can come and again help you work through. Is it the fear? If all your data is showing you this, what can you do to work through the fear to move in the direction of the choice that you want to make? Now, how do you do this in alignment with your values? Again, if I say I value honesty and integrity, then I have to be honest about what's coming up for me. That I'm terrified that if I trust this person again, they're going to betray me again. And, and then when I talk about the evidence, a lot of times partners will say, well, I didn't think he was going to betray me in the first place. So how do I know what I'm looking for, what I'm looking at? And this is where learning to trust yourself really comes into play. I ask them, how does your body feel when you're around this person? When they make a mistake, or you guys have a fight, or you're triggered, what happens? Oh, he leans in, he listens, he really practices empathy. I notice that, my nervous system starts to settle. Okay. Well, that your body's telling you something as well. And how do you trust that? But sometimes it's, you know what? I see all these boxes being checked, and that doesn't feel like enough. But I feel like a bad person for saying that it's not enough. The best part of being in an adult, adulting is hard, but the best part of being an adult is that we get to make our own choices. So even if it doesn't make sense to others, if my partner's checking the boxes and something still feels off, or I still don't feel safe, you don't want to run through that red light or that stop sign. You want to take some time to stop and consider it, because it could be alerting you to something that's still not settled or doesn't feel safe for you. So the things to do when you're making hard choices, again, is to think about your values, right? What's really important to you? What are the things that guide your decisions? You want to surround yourself with people who are wise counsel, who are going in the direction you want to go. You want to find a system or a way that helps you to keep track of what's happening or the data that you need in order to make a choice or a decision. If you are a spiritual person and you need to pray, spend time in prayer and give it time. You know, give yourself permission to take the time that you need and be willing to put yourself first. Be willing to let go of the people pleasing and what other people will think and all of the opinions and trying to hold things together. Choose to honor yourself and to know that you are worth it. Okay, so we've talked about choices and why choices are important, because it empowers you and empowerment is critical to healing. We talked about some of the hard choices that people need to make and why they struggle. And then we talked about how to make good choices, how to honor your own choices. And so I want to kind of wrap this all up with the idea of affirming yourself. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, the list and you read the list. Those are good. I believe in the power of affirmations, but I'm talking about speaking what is true. Philippians 4 talks about how we overcome anxiety and fear. And it is through focusing on what is true and lovely and the whole list of things that it talks about in the scripture. And so we have to focus on what is true. And that starts with what I said before. I have to remind myself, I do have a choice. I can even add, I do have a choice, and making choices is hard. I can say, I do have a choice, and I feel terrified to make one. But honoring the fact that I have a choice is the first step towards feeling empowered. If you don't know what your choices are, your affirmation can be, I have a choice. I can't see it right now. And I can find people who can help me do the work to see what my choices are. If it's a really hard choice that you know you need to make and you don't want to make, I have a choice. I'm not forced to do this really hard thing. I'm choosing to do it because of X, Y, and Z. And you can continue that even though I feel A, B, C, D, and E. Edith Eger in the book, The Choice, says that over time, she learned that she could choose how to respond to the past. That she could choose to be happy or miserable. She couldn't change what happened to her, but she had to make a choice about what was going to happen for her in the future. And we always have that choice. That's what she says. We always have that choice, the opportunity for control. I'm here. This is now. I've learned to tell myself over and over until the panicky feeling begins to subside. And sometimes the panicky feeling doesn't subside, and we have to take the choice or make a choice in the midst of fear and anxiety. But taking responsibility for your life, for every partner who's listening to this, you didn't choose what happened to you. You didn't ask to be betrayed. And God has given you a life that you are responsible for. How will you shepherd that life? Will you allow this betrayal, the trauma, to cut your life short, to end your desire for life? If you feel like that, there is no shame. That's an indication that I need help. I need more support. Maybe I need medication, but there's no shame in feeling that way. But you still have to make a choice. And the more that you make choices, the more empowered you will feel. The more empowered you will feel, the more you will heal. That just rhymes. I just realized that. But it all starts with recognizing what is true, and what is true is that you have a choice. All right, there you have it. We're talking about choices. Again, this stays in alignment with the theme of growing up, but I really wanted to come and talk to partners because I see and I can remember, that feeling of it, I don't have a choice. And it wasn't until I realized that I did, and that I just didn't like the choices that I had, that things really started to shift in my life. And this lesson, this ability to make choices, even hard ones, is such a good life skill because we never stop having to make choices. If you made choices and you don't like the choices you've made, you can always make different ones. Doesn't mean there won't be consequences, but you can make a new choice at any day, any time to do something different. And again, part of being an adult is recognizing that we have the freedom to do that. If you need help, if you're listening to this and you're like, I don't see my choices, Andrea. I don't see where I can do anything different. I feel very stuck. I am happy to help you. Reach out to me. You can call or text me, 832-422-5480. You can reach out via email at Coach Andrea, FAC, that's for Fully Alive Coaching, at gmail.com. You can go to my website, fullyalivecoachingllc.com, click the Get Started button, schedule a consultation. If you're already a client and you're like, "Woo, this is definitely something I need to work on in my session." A lot of us don't realize we're still imprisoned to the thoughts, beliefs, attitudes, psychology of how we grew up, what someone else said, what our church said, what our pastor said, you know, what our spouse has said. And we have lost the power to recognize that we have power. So if you need help with that, I would love to help you. The more empowered you feel, the more you will heal. Thank you for listening. Thank you for those who are sharing and liking the podcast. I really appreciate that. Continue to do that. Leave feedback. That's the way the podcast grows and gets exposure. So if you listen to it, all you got to do is click the little stars or the thumbs up, whatever is in your application to show that you liked it. You can leave a rating if you want. You can even leave a little comment. But either way, I so appreciate each and every one of you who continue to share and listen and spread the news. Continue to spread the news that there is help available and you are not alone out there in trying to heal and become a better human. Thanks for listening. This is Coach Andrea signing off for another episode of Blow the Whistle. As always, I want to remind you to dream big, love well, and live fully. Thank you for listening.